talk about movies, maybe a joke or two. It's pod on the cob. It's pod on the cob.
Greetings. I'd like to welcome you somewhere over the rainbow for the latest episode of Pod on the Cob, the podcast where we discuss the thrilling on-screen moments of corn and cinema and the movies that feature them. My name is Stephanie, and I'm here with Tyler. Tyler.
Wow.
Say hello.
I'm Tyler. Hello. I'm Tyler. What an amazing intro you scribed.
If you'd like to support the show, don't forget to rate us on whatever podcasting platform you're listening to us on. Follow us on social media and or just keep listening. We are so thrilled to be here and even more thrilled that you are here to join us. Tyler, are you ready to defy gravity today?
I'm just really holding space. Okay. Right now for that. Yeah, we are going to defy gravity today as we cover 2024's Wicked, directed by John M. Chu, starring Cynthia Erivo, Ariana Grande, Jeff Goldblum for like 15 minutes, and Michelle Yeoh for like 20 minutes. It was made on a budget of $150 million, and it's a movie that's been coming up in the podcast quite a bit recently, Steph.
Yeah, it really has been. And it's kind of on theme. Our last regular episode was The Wizard of Oz. So it was kind of only fitting that this be Wicked.
Yeah, between the Oscar special, where we talked a lot about Wicked, Wizard of Oz, which you wanted to review for your birthday, and also, we have your best of 2024.
Oh, yeah, the other bonus episode.
Right? Yeah. And you talked about Wicked. Yeah, lots of different episodes recently. We have been talking about something related to The Wizard of Oz. And yeah, felt like now was the time to talk about Wicked, which very brief internet research yielded the result that there was corn in this, which I guess we'll get to at some point.
Okay.
But yeah, here we are. We arrived.
Yes, we are here.
Steph, before we go into our history of Wicked, why don't you tell us what it's about?
Gladly. Before Dorothy and Toto make their fateful journey to Oz, Elphaba and Galinda dance through life, learn how to be popular, meet the wizard, and defy gravity in this prequel story. Cursed with green skin since birth, Elphaba Throp never fits in. While escorting her little sister to university, Elphaba's mysterious magical talents catch the eye of an esteemed professor. Forced to move in with the resident popular girl, Galinda, Elphaba forms unexpected bonds with her classmates, professors, and more importantly, herself. Will Elphaba be deemed wicked when she is forced to choose between what is right and what she thought she wanted all along?
I give that synopsis the official Corn Trophy.
Wow.
Her best synopsis yet.
I'm so honored.
That wonderfully done synopsis. And we definitely did the synopsis of the episode in the right place in the episode, and I didn't forget and skip past it and have to edit this into an awkward place.
Tyler definitely remembered that we do this every time.
I definitely remembered that we do this every single time. So typically, before we talk about the story of a movie, we always like to talk about our individual histories with it. Kind of a funny situation for you, because you sort of have been talking about your history with Wicked recently, but
yeah.
What would you add, or what do you want to tell the audience who haven't watched the last couple episodes?
Right, yeah. So I'll just recap. I love the music in Wicked. I grew up like, and we talked about this in Wizard of Oz episode as well, growing up in like a household that's very like music centered and musical. Like we're always, my family is always like walking around singing or breaking out in a song and dance at any time or moment.
That is true.
Cleaning the house or whatever. So naturally when Wicked came onto the scene, gosh, what was that? Like 2005 or six? Is that when musical came out? Something around there. We bought the like album, my family did, without seeing the play or anything, and just like fell in love with the soundtrack. My mom read the book, like we got really into it, and then we ended up going to see the play as a family later, you know, several years later. So I've kind of really been just like into it. I love the music. So then when the movie was coming out, I actually had really low expectations for it, but I was like, I'm still going to go see it. I went and saw it in the theaters, and the rest is history. And I've seen it. This was my third time watching it today.
Yeah, it hasn't been out that long, so that's really saying something. Yeah. Typically we like to kind of hide our like feelings about a movie until the end of the episode. But since you all already know that Steph really likes Wicked, I'm just going to go ahead and like get this out of the way and just say, this is my first time watching it, and I also really liked it. I thought it was great. I do have a brief history with Wicked. I've seen the play at the Pantages Theater.
Yeah, that's where I saw
least...
it.
Okay, yeah, cool. I've seen it there at least twice. I have always really liked the musical. It's kind of fun because, like, I feel like nowadays things like Wicked that are like a recanonization of like a pre-existing IP, you know, that's a very common thing
right
now. You know, it's really common to have like a requel or a reboot or like a weird forced prequel to something that's really popular. But Wicked, you know, obviously I know the movie's coming out now, but it really started doing this so much sooner than was like in vogue. And I've always liked Wicked's approach to redoing the story of The Wizard of Oz. I was also hesitant to see this. I was afraid it wouldn't be good. And I was really surprised and pleasantly surprised by how much I really enjoyed it watching it today.
Right on. And to just piggyback on that, there actually are a lot of Easter eggs in this movie that are like really fun. But we could talk about that as they come or later. Yeah.
Yeah, there's no lack of Easter eggs, but they're not like obnoxious.
No, and they're not
to me.
Honestly, they're not even that obvious. Like I said, third time watch through, and I was still getting new Easter eggs on the third time. So I'm like, okay, right on.
Yeah.
Love it.
I'll warn you right now, as we go through the story of this and we recap the plot, which is what we always do at this phase in the show, I'll warn you that you are going to need to remind me when songs happened in the movie. Because I realized as I was taking notes, like halfway through the movie, I was like, I haven't noted a single like, then this song
plays.
I did
most of the musical numbers, so I got you.
Okay. I'm not a big musical guy, musicals guy, I should say. That's a thing that Steph knows well about me.
Yeah.
My wife, Kaseyana, by the way, Kaseyana's nickname comes from her deep love for
right.
Ariana Grande.
Yes.
So very fun that we get to talk about that today.
Yes.
Kaseyana, she loves musicals. Most of the musicals I've seen in my life, I've watched with her.
Cool.
So to keep things true to form, I watched this with her and another mutual friend of ours. And those two were just having a ball.
Yeah.
They were singing along.
Oh, yeah.
They were like, they were having a great time.
The version that I have, my mom bought the movie like on our family shared whatever movie, Apple movie thing. And she bought the sing-along version.
Nice.
So it has like all the lyrics and like a little like bubbles and like glitter like floating across the screen to highlight the words as they come.
Okay.
All right.
Let's dive into the story, the full plot synopsis of The Wizard of I'm going to keep calling this The Wizard of Oz, of Wicked. Kick it off for us. How do things start?
Well, it opens with a very familiar scene, and it's fitting that we literally just did this movie for episode 5. It opens to like the tower scene that ends The Wizard of Oz, where Dorothy throws a bucket of water on the Wicked Witch of the West, thus causing her to melt into a puddle. And it has like this voiceover, you know, that says, yes, it is true. The Wicked Witch of the West is dead.
Right off the bat, opening shot, opening whole sequence. The first note I took was how good looking this movie is.
Yes.
It is so good looking. And
yeah.
I remember when the trailers were coming out, people were like, compare the Technicolor lighting of Wizard of Oz with this stupid, like, bad color graded CGI assisted lighting in this movie. And people were already bashing it before it came out, like people tend to do.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie is stunning looking.
Yeah.
I mean, it is so beautiful.
Yeah, so then there's like a whole sequence that I actually really love. You like follow this one of the flying monkeys that obviously you know from The Wizard of Oz. The monkey, I don't know if you noticed, flies over a rainbow. And then you fly over, you see the crew, the gang, Dorothy, the Scarecrow, the the gang, walking Toto on the yellow brick road towards the Emerald City. And you're kind of, right away, you're like immersed in Oz, right? So you see like, it's bright, it's colorful. There's all those rows of poppies and the yellow brick road and Emerald City in the distance. Then we find ourselves in Tyler's homeland.
Munchkin Land, where I was born and raised.
Munchkin Land.
If I have one critique in the early end of this movie, it's I love the look of Munchkin Land.
Yeah.
But I don't love the look of the Munchkins.
No,
they don't look very Munchkin-y.
Their hair's not plastic enough for you.
Their hair's not plastic. They don't have oversized like cowboy hats on and weird bells on their shoes. I wish they had made, it's one of the only things I think for a movie that tries so hard to like really capture the feeling of the source material, it's maybe the only thing that I was like, dude, they don't really look like Munchkins. But Munchkins are terrifying looking in the original, so maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah.
We arrive in Munchkin Land. Glinda, the good witch, arrives floating in a bubble and declares to Munchkin Land that the Wicked Witch of the West is dead.
And here we
have
a big
celebration.
Yeah, musical number. No one mourns the wicked. So they're like, good news, she's dead. It's pretty epic. I like this musical number.
And whereas Glinda wasn't our favorite character in the original, great entrance by Ariana Grande.
Yeah.
You immediately get her. I'm going to glaze her performance the entire podcast. She is so good in this. I was so surprised at how good she was.
I wrote down because I have mixed feelings about Ari's performance.
Okay.
When I first watched it, I was like, you know, well, okay, sorry, let me backtrack. This watch through, I changed my mind and that I was I actually was impressed with her performance, but I still stand by my original critique. When I came out of the theater the first time, I still was like, but she's just Ariana Grande. Like, I can't get past that she's Ariana Grande on screen. Like, if I'm talking to somebody about the movie, I don't say, oh, when Glinda does this, I'll be like, yeah, when Ariana Grande like does this. So I do think she did a good job, but I do think there's probably a lot of really talented people in the world who could have played the part like really well and maybe not have taken me out to be like, oh, that's Ariana Grande, you know? And I just see her like,
yeah,
I see it, I get it, I want it, I got it. Just like, okay.
Yeah, you know what's funny? I agree with you. And it's funny you say that, and I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but this is the beauty of, I guess, getting to do the podcast however we want to do it. I felt the same way about somebody else in this.
Same.
Jeff Goldblum
is
literally just Jeff Goldblum.
Okay.
But here's the thing. I love Jeff Goldblum, so I like don't mind.
You didn't mind.
But like I definitely am like, yeah, he's like not even really trying to do anything, you know, different with this than
literally,
he normally does.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
But I do appreciate Ari's dedication to the role.
Yes.
She did it. I also think watching The Wizard of Oz, you know, within the last 3 months or whatever, kind of gave me a new appreciation and perspective on Glinda as a character.
Sure.
Because she's like a right bitch, right? And she's totally like
shallow. Hated her in Wizard of Oz.
Yeah. So her coming in and kind of like being like, you know, she's Munchkins sort of like worship her as like a deity almost. And she's like, yes, isn't this so great? Like blah, blah, blah. Yes, she is dead.
So funny,
and she's just like singing her little opera notes and stuff. And they're all like, you know, Glinda, a little girl like in the crowd, why does wickedness happen? So right off the bat, we're thrown into existential crisis, right? Because why does wickedness happen? Glinda, tell us.
Yeah, so we get a brief little flashback on, you know, how Elphaba, the name of the Wicked Witch, was brought into the world. Her mom had an affair, and it's a funny like intro for a movie that's like based on Wizard of Oz, you know, but her mom had an affair and then gave birth to a green baby that everyone like was immediately horribly racist to because she was different.
I was going to say, all the while this is happening, we're also kind of the world is getting set up a little bit for us, because it's showing these flashbacks of Elphaba being born. And in the like room where she's being born, the doctor is like a fox, and the like there's all these animals who are talking and coexisting with humans somewhat harmoniously. So you're kind of introduced to this world where animals speak. They, you know, they have personalities and jobs, and they're kind of equals in a way to humans. And that's important for later.
Totally. And another thing that they kind of established that's important for later is that like Elphaba has like really powerful magical abilities.
Yes.
We get these kind of two scenes at the very start, like in a flashback, where she like kind of accidentally overuses her magic to like kind of cause chaos.
Right.
One of those times is because she's defending her sister.
Yes.
So they, you know, fast forward a little bit till she's like a little kid.
Yeah.
And she has a sister who is wheelchair bound. And yeah, they're kind of getting made fun of by these munchkin kids. And
yeah.
Elphaba like uses magic to shoot rocks at them. So we learned this kind of core thing about her, you know, these kind of core things about the universe are kind of getting set up.
And that her dad never didn't want her from the second he laid eyes on her. So she's kind of been, she's been ostracized since day one. She was raised by her nanny, which was a bear. So like the flashbacks are saying like, hey, like this kid didn't have it easy, right?
Right. There's another big thing we learn about Elphaba's history here, which is that her and Glinda were friends, or at least the townspeople, the munchkins, sort of accuse Glinda of being friends with her. So Glinda starts kind of pouring into that story, which ends up being the story of the movie.
Yes.
Which all starts at Shiz University.
University.
That's an Oz word right there. University. we go to Shiz.
Yes. And Shiz is a pretty cool looking school. I think they did a pretty good job. It opens to Glinda kind of riding in first day of school on a boat into this channel, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's you're not going to hear me say anything negative about the production design of this movie at all.
Right.
I completely understand why it won the Oscar for best production design. It's gorgeous. Every setting is so gorgeous, and the costumes are fantastic.
They are.
Especially what they put Ariana Grande
They're
fantastical. She looks great. They're fantastical. No, it's it earned those two awards. It really looks good. It's you feel very immersed. And they actually are pretty good with their restraint on the use of CGI as well. There's not like an overuse of that. The scenes where it is in it stand out a lot.
Yeah.
We'll talk about those. Really great looking movie.
Uh-huh.
Really great looking.
So Glinda arrives at school along with everybody else. They're all arriving for their first day. Elphaba is bringing along with her their father, who's the governor or the mayor or something, governor of somewhere.
Yeah.
He's an important guy or whatever. So they're bringing Nessa, who we talked about earlier, who's in a wheelchair. Nessa is going to Shiz University. Elphaba is not, but Elphaba's there escorting her. The dad is really nervous about Nessa's integration into the school, I guess. And right away, you kind of learn that Nessa is like fiercely independent. She doesn't want people to help her. She doesn't want people to push her chair. She's like, I got it. And she wheels away, and the dad's like, hey, Elphaba, go with her. Like, go make sure she's okay. Follow her.
A big major part of this scene is everyone's like reaction to her being green.
Yep.
In a world where there are talking animals, if you're green, That's where they draw the line. That's where they draw the line.
But there's a lot of anti-animal sentiment going around, which we'll get to later as well. So I think the society as a whole is maybe getting more and more narrow-minded. So they're not ready and willing to accept somebody with green skin. Elphaba kind of follows Nessa to where they're having like the school assembly, where they're introducing all the professors, welcoming all the new students. This is when we're introduced to Madam Morrible.
Right. Yeah, Michelle Yeoh's character.
And we also learn in this assembly that magic is kind of like a dying art. So there's not a lot of people who can do magic, with the exception of, I quote, our esteemed wizard. We find out pretty quickly Glinda is eager to work with Madam Morrible. She really wants to be a witch. Madam Morrible is pretty I don't know, how would you describe her?
She's very brisk and slightly like performative. Everything she does with like a bit of a flourish. But there's not a lot of humanity there. Yeah, she actually really displays that lack of humanity very quickly when, due to the way that Elphaba's sister is being treated by the people who kind of run the school, they're trying to like push her around in her wheelchair and get her to her room.
Yeah,
Elphaba has a little freak out, has a big magical explosion.
Yep,
and Madame Morrible just completely owns it and says that she was the one who did it, but definitely notices, you know, Elphaba. There's something special about Elphaba, right?
Yeah, so she approaches Elphaba and is like, hey, what you have is once in a lifetime. You must be my student. You must attend Shiz University. And Elphaba, you know, no, I can't. You know, this is my sister's school. I'm just dropping her off. Madame Morrible won't have it. Who's going to volunteer to room with Elphaba? And Glinda literally is like tripping over herself to get to talk to Madame Morrible. And she takes that as Glinda volunteering her room. And thus, they become roommates.
Yeah, it's a great scene. The first scene of them in their room together, they're so... One of the biggest, obviously, like the very... Like the first half of this movie is literally like just the story of these two completely different people who couldn't be more different in any way, and how they become unlikely, you know, friends, right? And I just love this first scene with them in the room. The room is completely pink, covered in lace, and... you know, all of these little rhinestones, like it's Glinda's room.
Glinda.
And she is, you know, allowing Elphaba to have like a corner of the room that she can stay in. They're immediately like diametrically opposed.
But let's not glaze over one of my favorite musical numbers in the whole movie. Elphaba is talking with Madame Morrible, and Madame Morrible's like, hey, like, pretty much how she convinces Elphaba to stay is, hey, like, you have that kind of magic that is going to get you to see the wizard. And don't you want to, like, not be different? Don't you want to, like, change your skin color is basically what she's saying. And
totally.
And so that leads to the song The Wizard and I, which I just think Cynthia fucking slays. That part where she runs into, like, the wheat field to the edge of the cliff and is just, like, belting out. I like get chills. It's so good. In it, there's some fun little Easter eggs where she's like, she feels so happy she could melt. And like, she says something else, like, when people see me, they'll scream. And like, but I love like these play on words and like things where you catch it and you're like, oh my God, like that's so, it's fun to like get something, right? Like when you're watching it, it's like, it's not so obvious, but like you get it.
All the singing performances by Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande are awesome. They're
amazing.
They're incredible singers. And yeah, this song is a good one.
Because then pretty quickly, you know, once we go into their room and obviously there's no space for Elphaba, we pretty quickly get into another musical number that's amazing. Loathing.
My favorite song.
Yeah.
It's my favorite one.
One
I love
of my
Loathing.
Favorites. It's so funny. Yeah. And they do a great job with it. Basically, they loathe each other. They hate everything about each other. I was kind of dead during the number because, like, what are their classes that they're taking at Shiz? Like, at one point, they're, like, doing a cooking chemistry class. And then they're, like...
And they, like, fight.
Okay, but they're not fighting. They're just, like, holding the sticks, like, to each other. And they're, like...
What was that, dude? I thought they were going to be brooms. I thought it was going to be, like, oh, like... You know, they're learning to fly or something. That was really funny, dude.
What are they learning?
Also, like, Kaseyana and our friend who was watching it with us was just like, I love Ariana Grande's outfit in that. But
I was literally going to say that's why they did it. So they could put Ari in a cute little, like, tennis outfit.
A cute outfit.
And everyone can go, let's go.
So speaking of classes they're taking at the school, we are introduced to kind of our first sort of class they're taking, which is taught by a goat.
Yep.
And the goat is voiced by Peter Dinklage.
Yes.
And this is where we start to kind of get a better idea of like what's going on with like the animal-human dynamics, which are essentially that animals in Oz can talk and they're smart and they can hold jobs. But because of some... traumatic event. I think it was like a drought or something.
A drought, the great drought.
animals are kind of starting to be seen as sort of like, they're sort of ostracized from society. They were blamed for the drought. And, you know, it's actually even kind of rare that a professor would be an animal. So it's rare that Peter Dinklage's character even is allowed to teach.
Yes. And right away, Elphaba kind of relates to Dr. Dillaman because, you know, he's speaking about how animals are ostracized and they're different. And there's like hateful sentiments towards them. And so right away, Elphaba's like, oh, I can absolutely relate to that. That's been my whole life. I totally know what you're going through. And as Dr. Dillaman is, you know, in the middle of his lecture, he like flips the chalkboard and on it is in like red scrawl says animals should be seen and not heard. And yeah. It's pretty crushing.
So obviously the movie's already evoking a lot of, you know, messaging around racism and discrimination. Mm-hmm. Not only do we have, you know, Elphaba, who is othered because of her skin color and treated poorly by society, but we're finding out there's a whole like marginalized group in animals that are also being treated poorly. Mm-hmm. And it's getting really serious. There's a scene, you know, shortly after this. I think there's like one scene between them, but I remember kind of thinking it was like fluffy and like nothing really happened in it.
Yeah, it was just about Elphaba's magic is tied to her emotions. So when Elphaba feels strongly, she feels strongly, she's able to like wield her magic.
Right. So then after that, there's a scene where she kind of sees like a secret meeting of animals. They're kind of meeting in the dark.
Yeah.
And they're sort of discussing how serious this is getting, how their activism is starting to kind of be, you know, penalized. Animals are getting fired. There's a conspiracy here. And I will say. This scene was a little like oh, she just like stumbles upon this super. It was a little like movie-ish for me that she just happens
well,
to see this thing happen.
Well, she followed Dr. Dillaman. She followed him there.
Right, but still, you're just kind of like it's a little.
He wasn't.
One thing you'll hear me say a lot is this movie's very long.
Oh,
and
God.
For a movie that's very long, there are things that I'm like, you could have used the length of this movie to help me believe that thing would happen a little more.
Yeah, that's totally
And a lot
fair.
Of those gripes for me kind of come from the animal plot line, if I'm being honest.
Yep.
It feels like a bit of an afterthought for like the
Big
first
time.
Like 75% of it.
Yeah.
So like, you know, long movie, they kind of maybe used their length a little bit more like wisely.
I know.
We totally. Didn't really need a scene where we find out that Elphaba's emotions make her magic work because, like, we've seen it happen a bunch of times already.
Yeah, like you know three what I mean? Times up to then. Yeah.
Yeah. But the other reason they had this scene is because in the woods that night, in the dark, she literally runs into Jonathan Bailey's character, Prince Fiero?
Fiero. Right? Yeah, Fiero. Okay.
Prince Fiero. Yeah.
Yeah, so Fiero, they have a little meet cute in the woods, and then, you know, she kind of rebukes him and storms off, and he's like in classic like handsome boy fashion where he gets whatever he wants. He's like, wow, we were just scorned by a girl. He, you know, then we get back to Shiz and a fervor has taken over campus. A prince is now attending the university.
Right.
Everyone is like head over heels for him. And that takes us to Glinda, who also finds out. She pretends to like be giving tours or something to students. So she walks them around campus. They wind up in the library, which brings us to our next musical number, Dancing Through Life. And should I just say it now?
Yeah, you should.
This is the corn.
Yeah, I watched this scene twice because I watched the whole movie and was like, uh-oh, there's no corn in this. And then we looked it up and I rewound and watched this scene again. And how is there corn in this scene, Steph?
Well, he picks up a book and is like singing with a book. And the book is titled Forbidden Corn. It's like a classic like romance kind of novel looking book cover. And it says Forbidden Corn. But did you
see
the other?
Forbidden Corn is obviously a tongue-in-cheek reference to corn being slang. Forbidden Corn. like definitely an obvious and a joke on something that happens with his character someday later on.
Yes. And then also, did you see the thing about the bookshelves?
I looked for it and I don't see it.
I looked for it, but I also thought, okay, because I couldn't see like corn engravings, but then I looked like you could kind of see from like far away how it could look like corn, you know, like the mixed textured corn. So
what Stephanie's alluding to is what the internet says. This dance number, there's engravings over his head that have corn in them. I that's what we're alluding to. I don't see it. I think if you look for it, you might just imagine that it's there, but I don't know. I can't see it. So he's a rapscallion. He's a troublemaker. He likes stirring the pot. And yes. He basically convinces everyone, well, not everyone. He convinces Ariana Grande and her coalition of friends to sneak out that night and go to Ozfest.
Ozdust.
Ozdust.
It's a club. Ozdust.
I was really paying attention. I was really paying attention. Ozfest.
It sounds like a music festival.
it's like a club or something.
Yeah,
we'll
it's a
get
club
there.
In town.
A few other characters get invited sort of like incidentally to this. So one of them is Bach, who is he's a munchkin who's in love with Galinda. And she, to kind of get him, Bach, off of her tail, Galinda convinces him to ask out Nessa Rose.
Nessa,
Elphaba's sister.
Yes.
So those two are now going to Ozdust, not Ozfest.
Ozdust.
And through a scene that I'm sure Steph is about to explain, Elphaba also ends up getting invited to Ozdust to some degree.
Yeah, so a few things happen. Nessa's really excited to get asked out to this party and tells Elphaba about it. And she instantly doesn't trust it because Galinda was involved, right? So she goes, Galinda, and Nessa's like, don't even start. I'm excited. So, you know, Elphaba's heart kind of goes out to her sister. So she takes that and says, okay, I won't push it. Goes back to her room where Galinda is getting ready for the night with her two friends. And they have been talking about Elphaba behind her back, if you can believe it. Saying some not so nice things. They find this ugly hat in Galinda's closet, which is the introduction to the classic black pointy witch hat that the Wicked Witch of the West wears. The backstory is Galinda's grandma makes them for her, but she doesn't have the heart to say like she doesn't like them, so she hangs on to them. Basically, they have this funny, quote unquote, funny idea to give it to Elphaba and invite her to the party tonight to embarrass her. So they do. Galinda gives it to her, says you should come tonight, and Elphaba's finally starting to be like, well, maybe I'll open up, maybe I'll go.
Yeah, maybe Galinda's actually being nice to me. Like sadly, she's a little fooled by this.
She is very fooled. And then what does she do?
She goes to Michelle Yeoh, because I don't remember her character's name, Madame Morrible.
It's horrible, but with an M. Madame Morrible.
She goes to Madame Morrible's house and tells her, like, they don't really tell us what happens, but we know that she goes and talks to Michelle Yeoh. And then we are transported to Jabba the Hutt's palace from Return of the Return of the Jedi. A bunch of CGI animals play instruments awkwardly and people dance badly to
people
music.
People dance so weirdly. It's like,
the scene very much.
No, it was very cheesy.
And Casiana and her and our friend were like, oh, they like paused it and they're like, they literally said, you're gonna hate this scene. You're gonna hate this scene.
They know.
And I was
you
like,
so
why?
Well.
Oh no, why? And they were right. I didn't hate it, but it, like, yeah, it's a little. I didn't really love the Ozdust like setting very much. It was. I said earlier in the podcast, we will mention when the CGI is overused, and that scene is like,
yeah, like
you don't
the
need
chickens
all the animals
playing the piano.
To pee
DJs. I know it was kind of stupid. Yeah.
There is some good emotional core in that scene that I do like, because Elphaba or Michelle Yeoh shows up to Ozdust, just so weird. But that she does it all in the same night is so awkward. Again, a movie that's 2.5 hours long.
I know.
And what is it with these pacing issues?
I think it's because it's an adaptation of the stage play. And you can kind of look at it with like, okay, stage play, you have all these transitions, right? Where they're having to change out the set or the characters or the actors are having to like change really quick out on the wings of the stage or whatever. And feel like with adapting that to a movie, you could smooth over some of that
yeah.
stuff, but yeah. I don't know that they do.
You could have figured out how to structure this a little bit better. But
yeah.
essentially what happens is, for no reason really at all, Madame Morrible goes to Ozdust, sees all the students there that are not supposed to be there,
doesn't do
anything about that, gives Ariana Grande, gives Galinda a wand and says, fine, whatever, you can be a student of mine because your friend here, Elphaba, is like basically looking after you, right? She says that I should teach you how to be a witch or whatever they call them in this universe. So fine, whatever. So then, of course, Galinda is like immediately guilt stricken because she realizes Elphaba is going to like go and make a fool out of herself at this CGI nightclub. And she feels terrible like right away. Yeah. And what happens next?
Well, the timing couldn't have been better or worse for Galinda, because in walks Elphaba wearing the hat. Everybody's like, literally the music stops. The band stops playing for some reason.
For a really, really long time.
Well, I kept saying, why did the band stop? This is a nightclub. The band would keep playing. They don't give a shit who walks through the door. Like, I've seen weirder people than that walk into a nightclub wearing weirder shit than that.
So it would have been funny as like a record scratch moment where it just stops for a second and then resumes.
I know.
But there's literally no music in the scene for like 7 minutes.
Seriously. And it gets more awkward because like she walks in, everyone's snickering, and Elphaba decides to like, you know, hold her head up, shoulders back, walks to the center of the dance floor, where she then starts doing an interpretive dance to no music. I actually don't get this scene at all. Like, I really don't get it. Why does she start dancing to no music? Why does she keep dancing?
Oh my God, yeah.
I literally don't get it. I don't get it.
And then, you know, to make it have more depth, Galinda starts dancing with her awkwardly. So they're like awkward together. And then, you know, of course, everyone just like is like, oh, forgets about it. And everything's cool. And the music starts up. And
well, because if the popular girl makes it cool, then it's cool. So now Elphaba's
speaking of popular,
cool.
Put a pin in that. yeah, it like could have been done so much, like it was overly done. That scene is so overly done. Like, you could have just had Galinda just be like walking to the center and put her hands on her shoulders and been like, love the hat, that's fabulocious, or some like Oz word, and everyone would have been like, yay, and clapped, and they all would have partied, and it would have been done in like 1 minute.
Dude, you're right. Because
it could have been done
like,
so much better. It wasn't
like,
even very Galinda
doing these
to
weird
handle it that way.
Dance moves, and I was just like, why is this so long? Elphaba starts crying, like quiet crying. I'm like, I don't really quite understand. But I put in my notes, commence friendship. So
yes, they become
Elphaba
friends
and
here.
Galinda are friends.
It's genuinely touching, I'll say. It's genuinely they do a great job of making them hate each other so much, so convincingly, that when they become friends, it actually is like satisfying, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the next musical number?
Yeah, this also might be my favorite song.
Yes. Historically, really like this has been my absolute favorite. It's a classic. It's amazing.
Yeah. Popular.
Popular.
Ariana Grande performs it like, I don't know, I thought really well. She's got so much, she really like embodies that side of Galinda's character, the very like vapid, kind of superficial, princessy side.
Uh-huh.
I just really think Ariana Grande like nails it. And I love her body language, the way she flips her hair, the way she kind of like overacts being like a little like a pouty brat when she's pouting. Like, and this song just brings all of those best traits out, I think, of hers. It's a great scene for her.
Yeah. Yeah. And basically she's trying to give Elphaba a makeover. Elphaba's kind of just down. It's pretty funny.
Well, all the good vibes immediately die.
Immediately.
yeah, they go to class and Peter Dinklage's goat professor.
Dr. Dilliman.
Dr. Dilliman. I love that you have to help me with every name in this movie. Dr. Dilliman is arrested, and we find out that animals are not allowed to teach anymore.
No longer permitted. And then he's dragged out of class, like, very violently and traumatically in front of all the students. And in walks this new teacher. Apparently, he's going to be their new history professor, pushing a cart. And on the cart, very sadly, is a caged little, is it like a little leopard cub or a lion cub?
it's a lion cub. I believe the cub was feeling very cowardly inside that cage when they wheeled it in.
Oh my God. It was very sad.
I'm guessing.
It was very sad, very cute little lion. Basically, the guy that who wheels it in, this new teacher, is like, you know, animals belong in cages, blah, blah, blah. Elphaba does not agree. She like casts a spell, which this correlates to the Wizard of Oz. She uses poppies to make everybody fall asleep. Everybody except for herself and Fiero.
If only they had a little bit of asbestos in that classroom, they could have woken everyone
needed.
Up real easily.
That's all they needed.
A little bit of asbestos. Yeah.
So Fiero and Elphaba quickly grab the lion cub out of the cage and run. I love also they hop on bikes and it's like she's on the bike and it's also kind of a nod. It's a nod to her in The Wizard of Oz, The Wicked Witch of the West. And they go to like set the cub free. They have a little moment where they kind of like, you know, longingly look at each other in the eyes, and which leads to a beautiful, beautiful ballad. I'm Not That Girl, sung by Cynthia Erivo, Elphaba. Mm-hmm. Basically where she's just like, you know, my whole life, like I'm not who Glinda is, right? I won't be who he chooses. I won't. That's not me.
Yeah. You thank God that you are calling out where the songs in this movie are. Because you've caught them all. I don't have any of these. I would have forgot all of these. You can tell I'm not a musicals guy. You know, my biggest thought I was having that entire scene with the poppies.
Tell me.
Like the biggest thought I was having. How come the only people who don't wear student uniforms the whole movie are like only the main characters? Why do you think that would be?
Interesting.
It's almost like they want them to stand out from the crowd
the
whole time.
It's almost like we're, our eyes should just be drawn to them.
Well, my eyes are drawn to something in the next scene, and that is a green balloon coming from the sky, a message from the wizard himself.
Wow.
Summoning Elphaba to the Emerald City, where she can get her heart's desire granted. And then there's a really fantastic scene on the train, at the train station, before Elphaba's going to leave for the Emerald City. I really, really liked this scene a lot.
Which, like, the whole thing?
Yeah. Yeah, I liked the conceit of the scene is that Elphaba is about to leave for Emerald City so that she can meet the wizard. And while she's there, her and Glinda are having like a nice emotional kind of farewell. And Fiero shows up and he has a poppy in his lapel.
Yeah.
He's clearly like fallen for Elphaba.
Yeah.
They're clearly talking in coded language and Glinda can't seem to understand the coded language.
Not at all.
And she misinterprets it as, I'm going to become an activist for animals' rights as well, because that seems to be something that Fiero's suddenly into.
Yeah.
So to show her activism, she does like the ultimate like Instagram virtue signaling thing you could possibly do.
Oh my
she
God.
Changes her name from Glinda to Glinda because Professor Tillman couldn't say her name properly because of his goat mouth. So he always called her Glinda.
Yeah.
That's her form of showing. That's her black square on Instagram showing that she stands by Black Lives.
Right. I loved how Glinda was like, Elfie, there's a train here to take you to Emerald City. And it comes with a little man with a mustache. The man's just like, I don't know. It made me laugh.
The train was cool too.
The train was fun.
I like the design of the train.
Too. I like like some of the tech and stuff's kind of fun. It's like almost like steampunk-y.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so.
So Elphaba's on the train. It's literally rolling out of the station. Glinda remembers she has like a little pamphlet or a magazine about the Emerald City that she wants to give to Elphaba. So she's running after her. And Elphaba says, hey, join me. Come jump on. Join me. Come with me. So she does.
Yeah, they go together. They go together to the Emerald City, which is nice to see the Emerald City actually like look like a city and not like a big, gigantic, empty set like it is in The Wizard of Oz. Emerald City's bumping, man. People are singing and dancing. Kristen Chenoweth and Idina Menzel are there.
Okay, Tyler, you got to tell me. What do you think about that?
I think it's cute. Because you're not going to cast them in the movie as the main characters, of course. Like, they've aged out of the roles pretty much at this point. I think it's just that they're giving them a song. They're letting them sing. They still get to be in the movie. I thought it was harmless.
Okay. You're so generous.
You like it?
Those of you who don't know, but I'm sure everyone who's listening does, Kristen Chenoweth and Idina Menzel are the original Broadway cast for who play Elphaba and Glinda. And in the Emerald City, no, I think it's like so, like, I don't know what the word is for it. It's like, it to me, it becomes really like kitschy and cheesy and like it cheapens it a little bit for me where it's like, and I adore them. So I'm not like poo-pooing them or their performance or their singing, but it sort of becomes like Disney-fied or something to me. And I'm kind of like, yeah, so tongue-in-cheek. And I'm like, whoa, okay. Again, in a 2-hour, 40-minute runtime movie, like, did we really need this whole scene with them singing and like with all these little cutesy like references to their original performances and them singing on the original soundtrack? And I'm just like, okay, guys. Relax.
I also probably, if I'm being honest, like, I probably would have ended the movie here if I was like the studio. Like, I like them going to the Emerald City feels like a really great ending, and a good like the next big arc of the story will be them in the Emerald City. What's going to happen there? And I kind of think everything that happens from this point forward feels really rushed.
It's because they wanted to do the first act of the play. So
right.
They ended it where the first act of the stage play ends, like where intermission begins if you were seeing the play.
Which I totally get trying to replicate that.
Right.
I just don't know how effective it was for me.
It does feel rushed because, yeah, I mean, whatever. Emerald City was cool. The musical number was fun.
Oh no, I like all of this. For what it's worth, I'm not saying I don't like these scenes. I just feel like I actually, maybe that's the opposite of what I'm saying. I liked these scenes so much. I wish they had
more
time to breathe.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just my opinion. And I also don't know if it would have been a dramatic ending having them go to the Emerald City. Like, I kind of get why they didn't do it.
Yeah, because
I wish this stuff didn't feel rushed.
How the movie ends. So we'll get
same.
There,
I know. We'll get there. I wish you could take that powerful ending and make that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think if they just cut some of the stuff
that we didn't need, like the dozen chickens playing the like piano at
Ozdust,
I think we probably could have gotten there a little quicker. But
totally.
I wanted to adding on to like Idina Menzel and Kristen Chenoweth singing in the Emerald City, the like man at the door who lets them in to see the wizard. Do you know who that is?
No.
It's Stephen Schwartz, the writer of Wicked.
Oh, cool.
So when they go up and they hand like the doorman the invite that they got, and he like looks up into the tower to this man and goes, and it like zooms in on him and zooms in and he's like, "You may enter." That's Stephen Schwartz. So that's who wrote all these songs and who wrote the play.
Nice. Thank you, Steph. I appreciate that.
You're so welcome.
Now we basically get another cameo because we get someone who's ostensibly playing the Wizard of Oz. Well, first before we meet the person, we get to meet the illusion, which, you know, obviously in the Wizard of Oz, it's a big floating green head, which is really spooky. In this, it's like a robotic head that kind of comes out of this curtain of beads.
Yeah.
Neat.
I think it's well done.
It's cool.
Yeah.
I liked that a lot. But we get to see what the wizard really is. And the wizard is essentially Jeff Goldblum playing Jeff Goldblum with a green jacket on.
Okay. I was dying the whole time. I was telling Chris, I'm like, I don't think like Jeff Goldblum had a script. Like, I think they were just like, okay, Jeff, like go just like talk. Cause he's like, well, you know, like just literally just was Jeff Goldblum. Like, well, you know,
dude, that's really funny.
You could just get this like going right now. Then you'll just, wow. Sorry. My Jeff Goldblum impression is really bad, but you get the idea.
No, I loved your impression. It was spot on. No, he's really just like in it. But like I said earlier in the podcast, if you like him, you're going to like it.
I like
and
him
I like
too,
him,
again,
so
I'm
I
like...
liked it. Yeah.
But again, Keanu's talk about being taken out of a movie by an actor. His musical number, he does have a musical number here. I think it's probably the most boring song of the whole movie. Yep.
It wouldn't be a Pot of the Cob movie if there wasn't like a sleazy con man like shyster character in it. And it's been the wizard in two movies in a row, but I love sleazy con men characters. He is frothing out on Elphaba. he's making some big promises to her that someday she's going to live in his mansion with him and all this stuff. He asks her what her heart's desire is, because she points out that in the diorama, there's a figurine of her that's green, and she's like pointing out that it's green. And he's like, well, what color do you want it to be, right? Is that your heart's desire? But that's not her heart's desire.
Turns out, what
is her heart's desire?
Turns out it's not. I don't even really know how to answer that. Her heart's desire is like equality, right? Like for all those living and breathing in Oz. Her heart is broken by the whole situation back at Shiz with Dr. Dilliman and the animals.
The next thing that happens is Michelle Yeoh shows up inappropriately, awkwardly in a scene for the second time in the movie, where like you're just like, oh, she's there at the Emerald City. She could have just gone with her in the train
and like gone around together. I know.
And she just shows up at the right time again, like she did at the other place. She shows up and she's like, hey, there's a book that we've never talked about in the entire movie. It's never come up once.
Except for when Kristen and Adina were singing.
Right.
Just not like 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, 5 minutes ago. You know, this is what I'm saying about this whole Emerald City thing. Everything after this feeling so rushed.
Like, yeah.
It's a book and it's really magic and you're really magic and you might be able to read from it and you should try reading from it sometime.
Here's the book.
Yeah.
Go.
So then she reads out of it.
Don't worry if you can't.
She reads out of it. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you're right. It is all so fast. Like, and convenient, right? So conveniently located across the room is the book. Elphaba walks up to it, opens it. It opens for her. Wow, yay. We're so excited. It opens. She starts reading. She turns out she can read the language, this like lost language. And it's a levitation spell or a flight spell.
Yeah.
And kind of sadly, the Emerald City guard, who is a monkey, is like standing right there, and the spell like gets cast onto them, and they very painfully sprout wings.
Yeah, it's like actually really gnarly and like kind of like intense.
Uh-huh. It's very intense.
It sprouts wings. It's clearly in pain the entire time this is happening. And this is where we get the origin of the flying monkeys that work for the witch and the Wizard of Oz, because all of the monkeys in the castle end up growing wings. And Elphaba, you know, who we just found out her heart's desire is the equal rights of animals and people, is so disgusted by this that she correctly guesses that the wizard and Madame Morrible are sort of behind a lot of the discrimination against animals. And yeah, the wizard basically tells us, like, it's a classic tactic where I'm from. The U.S. of A.
Earth.
It's a classic tactic.
Middle America.
Right. Like, the world. It's a classic tactic to make an enemy out of someone, to bring everyone else together. So we're making animals the enemy. And with your help, these monkeys are going to help spy on the other animals. And that's basically why we want you here, to use this book to make this agenda happen.
Yeah, they used her like a piece of dental floss. They just ripped her out, used her, and we're going to just throw her away. She did not like this. And we find out the wizard's powerless. Like, he actually doesn't have any power. He's calling himself the wizard.
He's just a sleazy con man.
Yep, but nope. And so Elphaba is like, no, dude, I'm out. So she grabs the grimoire and she runs. The chase is on. She's trying to get away, and Madame Morrible goes on the like loudspeaker and basically alerts the whole kingdom that she's on the run. We can't let her escape. She's a fraud. She's a thief. Kind of, you know, in classic authoritarian fascist dictator fashion, they are saying everything that they are, right? So she's a liar. Yeah. She's a thief. Don't trust her. She's the reason everything sucks. A lot happens. Glinda goes after her to try to keep her on the side of the wizard. But her loyalty is kind of torn, because she does love Elfie as her best friend. So they're kind of escaping together, and it all sort of leads us to them kind of up in this high tower. It's sort of like a deserted area. This big window is like broken, and there they are to have their like final conversation. Mm-hmm. Elphaba asks Glinda to join her. Glinda says no.
Yeah, gives her a really long black shawl that she can wear because she's shivering.
She's trembling.
Yeah,
and all the while kind of the song is starting technically, I guess, but to the...
What song is starting, Stephanie? What song is starting?
Song, Defying Gravity.
Yeah, and it's really incredibly powerful. And honestly, it's the only thing I would say to refute my own point from earlier, saying that the movie should have ended earlier. If the movie ended earlier, you wouldn't have this scene. So yeah, you know, it's a bit of a mixed bag for me because you get this kind of rushed ending that leads to like an incredibly powerful last moment. But yeah, you know, the execution of it is a little fumbled for me. But the Defying Gravity scene is incredible. So it's a big set piece. They're being surrounded by guards and flying monkeys. And all the while, Elphaba is learning how to fly on this broom. And she's singing what she's feeling, which is that, you know, everyone deserves a chance to fly. She's taking that chance. And she has this huge dramatic like escape from the castle. And it's very, very well done. And really powerful.
Yeah, it's amazing. When I was a kid and I saw the play and this song, like I said earlier, it finishes act one of the play and you go to intermission. And I actually cried because it was so impactful. When I saw it for the first time in the theaters, I like got teary eyed. I got goosebumps. It was just like, I don't know, something about it with that, like that feeling, because we can all relate to that feeling, right? Of not wanting to, like, don't hold me back. Don't hold me down. I'm who I am. Like, I need to just be free and be myself.
Yeah.
And it's just so beautiful. I love it. As this is all happening, we get the first time she's called the Wicked Witch. Madame Morrible mm-hmm. calls her the Wicked Witch. We see over what's happening at Shiz, and they're like evacuating Shiz, and Fiero is looking around and kind of gets away on his horse, we assume, to try to get to Elphaba. So we're kind mm-hmm. of getting set up for what we can expect it to see in the upcoming movie.
What's the final line of dialogue in the movie? Did you write it down?
I didn't write the dialogue. I wrote the song down. And nobody in all of Oz, no wizard that there is or was, is ever gonna bring me down. I'm not going to go there, but...
Yeah, dude, you got
thank
it.
You,
great.
Thank you.
That works. That's the best ending delivery ever.
She does her war cry, and it is so epic.
It's great. It's really strong.
I can't believe... Have you seen her perform this at the Grammys?
No.
Cynthia?
I have not. Should I watch that?
Yes. Everybody go YouTube. Cynthia... Well... Ari does some of it with her. So Google them, their performance at the Grammys. It is freaking awesome. They do like a little medley and it's amazing. And it ends, of course, with this ending. And she does it live. So there's none of those like little pauses where in the movie it's kind of like pause to go flash over to see them and then like pause. It's like she does it through and like she's such an incredibly talented singer and like her mm-hmm. breath work is so amazing. She does it all in like one breath and you're just like, what the fuck? Is she human? Like, how is this possible? So yes,
yeah.
Highly recommend going and watching it, her sing that live because it's amazing.
Right on. Yeah, I will. That's great. Everyone listening to the podcast, do that. Do what Steph just said. I trust her on this. So we're talking about all these good things. What were the three best things about Wicked for you there, Steph?
Well, mine are, I feel like I've said mine like a million times. The music, I love the music from this movie. I feel like it was adapted really well from a play. I've seen other like Broadway plays adapted to screen and I think that's kind of like a tough thing. And this, I feel like they did pretty well. I really like the costumes and the set, hair and makeup. Like, I feel like that was really done really well. And then I liked the Easter eggs throughout. Like,
yeah,
I've mentioned them kind of as we've gone. There's a few others. And like, if you Google like Easter eggs in Wicked, you can just go down like this rabbit hole of how, yeah, it's really fun. What did you like?
Mine are similar. I like everything you said. So those things, some of them I actually put on my list. So I said production design, with the exception of the sets that felt especially like CGI to me, which there are not very many of, I really was like every scene had so much detail and like care put into it. Even like the last scene where they're just in that tower and it's just like this like abandoned attic.
Yeah.
There's like little boxes in the background with like labeling on them and all these little hints to the wizard's past. Really just amazing production design. The look of this movie through and through is great. These are the two things that won Oscars for. So I'll just say my second thing was the costuming, especially Elphaba and especially Glinda. There's not a scene where they're not in a costume that I'm like, oh my God, I love that. Or like, that caught my attention. And then my third would be, I just liked really the majority of the performances for me. I don't know who I liked more between Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande. I felt like they both were embodying the roles really well. Ariana Grande made me laugh the whole movie. I liked, you know, I don't mind Jeff Goldblum just kind of just being Jeff. It doesn't really bug me. I get why that would bug somebody else. I really do. And then... You know, like I liked, like we talked about Michelle Yeoh earlier. I think I liked her performance just fine, but well, this will bleed into my negatives, I guess.
Yeah, same.
Okay, I'll go there then. Her character was so horribly underdeveloped that I don't even think it's her fault if the performance didn't land with you, because we know she can act.
Yeah.
You know, I think she just wasn't given a lot to work with. And a lot of things felt underdeveloped. Actually, all three of my bads, my least favorite things about the movie, are all tied to things being underdeveloped. I thought the animal storyline is ignored for too long for it to really matter to me at the end.
Yeah. It's kind of just like convenient, right? It's like just like a plot device to try to give Elphaba like to try to like give her humanity or something. I don't know.
Which is great. It's just that there's a whole... It feels like something you're never excited to see. When they pull you away from Elphaba and Glinda getting to know each other and that whole storyline, the one that I felt really like emotionally attached to, whenever they pulled it out and they started talking about the animals, it didn't quite click for me. Yeah. I get that it's really important. And I get in the next movie it's going to be like wildly important.
Right.
And I'm not saying it wasn't important in this. It was just kind of felt like it was like maybe a little clumsily introduced into it. And like clumsily maintained for me. Like it's in the whole movie, but it's never in it to the degree that it probably should be for how important it is for the ending, I guess. And I guess that takes me to my final in general critique, which is for a movie that's this long, I shouldn't feel like anything is underbaked. I should feel like everything, if anything, I should be thinking like, oh my gosh, we don't need you to tell us this much detail. We don't need so much of this. And the movie's so long, I don't know. There's no excuse for why it would ever feel so shallow to me. Yeah, that's my major critique, I'd say.
Yeah, mine are very similar. I just do not in my heart of hearts believe that any movie should be 2 hours and 40 minutes long. I just think that's too long.
It's part one of two. There's a whole other movie coming out, you know?
Just make it shorter, you know?
I agree. That's just too much.
So that's like my biggest thing. It's just like, fuck, dude, too much, too long. And then I do not mean this as a critique against the actors themselves, but I really was taken out by Jeff Goldblum and Michelle Yeoh's performances. I just didn't think – and it's like a musical, right? Like, and I understand they're trying to stack the cast to get people in the seats to, you know, for ticket sales and profit and stuff. But, like, you already have Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo. Like, just get people who –
The train's coming. Yeah. Is that the train to the Emerald City passing by your house?
One short day in the Emerald City. Dude, I've been singing all day long. I'm driving everybody crazy. Yeah, so I just thought that was kind of like, it was just too like, and it's like a musical, so get people. But, you know, we can love them, but also critique. I think that's
definitely
fair.
Definitely. Even though I defended Jeff Goldblum as the wizard in my little spiel, I will say when they were announcing that he was going to play the wizard, before I even clicked the link, I was like, it's probably going to be somebody like Jeff Goldblum. because that's who you would cast in a movie to like play the flamboyant eccentric. And then like, so when I saw it was him, like, I was kind of like, it's so like, it's a little easy.
He was so, oh man. I mean, but hey, we're talking about it this much, so it did something right?
Yeah. Did you have a third thing?
No, those were just mine. Yeah.
Well, here at Pod on the Cob, we don't rate movies. We don't give them a 5 out of 5 for how good or bad they are. We don't give them a Rotten Tomatoes score of any kind. I think we've already kind of demonstrated how we feel about this movie as we've talked about it. There's no mystery there. The way that we rate movies at Pod on the Cob is we rate how well corn was utilized in the plot of the story. Now, I have my interpretation of that, which is the words I just said.
Yes, that's fair.
And Steph has her interpretation of that, which is like a Lynchian fever dream that we're all kind of figuring out what she means when she gives a cob rating.
Yeah.
No, I love starting with you because you always have a weird rating. What's your cob rating for?
My cob rating for Wicked is 1 cob.
Okay. All right. See, that is reasonable to me.
Thank you. So my thinking on this was I was going to give it even less, but then I thought, you know, it's kind of clever that like I had to, you know, it's like a title of a book that one character happens to like look at and make a turn and like the camera sees it for like all but what, less than 30 seconds. You see this book cover on the screen. So I thought that was kind of like fun. But to be fair, I did watch the whole movie, you know, trying to look out for corn. I rewound several times at different parts. Like, wait, was that, wait, what? Okay, let me see. Maybe we were flying over it. Nope, didn't see it. Then at the very end, I had to Google it and then go back and rewind to the scenes and try to find it. So the fact that it was kind of, we've been saying this all this whole episode about Easter eggs, the fact that it was kind of like a little Easter egg hunt was sort of fun. So did you think I was gonna give it like a 5?
I thought you're gonna be like, I just, you know, I don't want to give it a 5 because that would be too much. I'm gonna give it a 4.9 out of 5.
Yeah,
because I love Defying Gravity so much.
I do love Defying Gravity.
I know you do. which is totally valid. We love your rating system. Yours made sense today.
I think
for me, yours made sense.
Cool.
I'm giving this thing 0. Listen, it doesn't even really have corn in it. It barely even
is the word corn.
The word corn is written on a book for like a second. Something's got to get 0. Something in our list has got to get 0. So I'm giving it a 0. Maybe the next one will have a little bit more. I gave Wizard of Oz 1. It's only fair I give this. I guess I won't give it 0 because 0 is like the absence of corn. So I'll give it like
0.1%. 0.1%. Okay.
I'll give it like the smallest number. I'll give it this. How about this? I'll challenge the listeners and just say, decide for yourself what the smallest increment of score I could give this is that doesn't make it 0. The absolute lack of corn. Yeah. That's the answer I'll give. Mathematicians, start jotting down your equations. Let us know what you think my score for this movie is in a comment on our YouTube video that you might be watching or our maybe whatever podcast you're listening to.
And
leave
please,
a comment.
Please provide like proof that you did the work because we need to see the maths or we won't believe you.
This is like school. You can't just submit the
like
answer.
School.
We want to see the work. Uh-huh. We want to see the work.
Yeah.
That's all I've got to say about Wicked. Anything else you want to throw in there, Steph?
No. I don't think so. That was fun. Yeah. Thanks for listening, everybody. Again, if you want to support us, please, please, please rate us. Follow us on social media. Tell your friends. Tell your family. Write to us, tell us what you thought of Wicked. If you happen to see corn that we didn't and the rest of the internet didn't, let us know. We're open-minded.
I want to know. I will change my score if you can convince me to change my score. Yeah, please do. And hey, don't forget to hold space for Defying Gravity.
Yeah, this was Pod on the Cob. My name's Stephanie.
I'm Tyler. Keep cobbing on.
Peace out.